Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. This is your host, the Italian Stallion, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host from the American Enterprise Institute, Dr. Rick Hess. Rick, welcome.
Howdy ho.
Hello, hello. Well, for those of you listening for the first time, which is everybody, because this is our inaugural issue, here's how the show works. We start off with an interview most times, today with the indefatigable Checker Finn.
Nice.
Thank you, thank you. I said that word right. Then Rick and I play Pardon the Gadfly, where we debate a couple topics and try to pound each other into fine powder. And then we finish with a story from Education News of the Weird. And this week's story will make you fidget, I promise.
Looking forward to it.
All right, good. All this in less than 15 minutes. So listeners, don't worry. It's not a lot of time wasted in your day.
Beautiful thing. And if you're trying to waste time, you can listen twice.
Very good. Rick, see, you are always up with innovative ideas. I like that.
That's what I do.
All right. Well, earlier this week, I sat down with the original Education Gadfly, the one and only Checker Finn. Let's take a listen. Checker Finn, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Thank you very much. It's the best show going.
That's right. Yes, it is. Well, Checker, first of all, understand that you are working on a book, and our listeners probably want to know, is this science fiction? Is it romance? Is it poetry? What is it?
It's poetic, it's romantic, it's historic, it's a memoir of the last 50 years of education reform in the U.S. as I've experienced it.
Okay, very good. Well, we're looking forward to that. Well, let's talk about some recent history. Last week, the Center on Education Policy released a new report that claimed to show that 71% of school districts across the country are narrowing the curriculum, that they are squeezing out the arts and science and social studies, at least in some part, to make room for more instruction in reading and math. So the question is this a good thing, a bad thing? And if it is a bad thing, what can we do about it?
Listen to those verbs, narrowing, squeezing. You could just as easily have said that the school districts are obliging kids to learn reading and math before they go on to science and history and art. The really good school heads that I've talked to, people who've had a lot of success, especially with inner city kids, are saying if they get to third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade and they can't read, they don't have much prospect of learning very many other things. And so we have to pause and concentrate on reading and math until they stop counting on their fingers and can read the words on the page.
Okay, that's fair. But is that the only choice these schools have, is to get rid of those other subjects while they're teaching reading and math?
Of course not. What they ought to do is expand the total. If you go from a 5.5-hour school day to a 7 or 8-hour school day, you could have both. But if you try to do everything between 8:30 in the morning and 2 in the afternoon, you're going to have to make painful choices. And the painful choices are going to end up being 3 hours of reading and 2 hours of math.
Okay, so then why aren't we expanding the school day? I mean, this has been an obvious solution for a long time.
If I were a school system answering that question, I'd say, oh, it's much too expensive and it's not in the union contract. If I were me answering that question, I'd say it's because school systems don't know how to reallocate resources in a rational way in order to accomplish the objectives that those resources are supposed to accomplish.
Okay. All right, well, let me ask you a question about the source of this data. This came from the Center on Education Policy. It's their fourth annual report on No Child Left Behind. And some have claimed that, you know, this report, all it does is report the opinions of school district people around the country, and that therefore, you know, we shouldn't really take it very seriously. It's just the education blob, so to speak, telling us their opinion on No Child Left Behind. How do you take that?
Well, I have a beef about the Center for Education Policy that I'll get to in just a second, but the methodology question, I don't think they had much choice. They're being faulted for gathering their data by asking school systems what they're doing, and I don't know any other way to gather hard data on a topic like this, how much time is spent on one thing versus how much time is spent on another thing. I think they were probably stuck with the school system survey as the only way to get any information on this topic. I don't fault them for that. What I fault them for is representing their conclusions, and especially the media representing their conclusions, as if they were impartial, objective, and apolitical. The fact of the matter is that the Center for Education Policy and its esteemed and charming director, Jack Jennings, are famously partisan. They've been for more federal education spending for 30 years. Jack has. And he's no more an independent arbiter of the policy implications of these data than George W. Bush is an independent arbiter of the policy implications of No Child Left Behind. it's a strongly partisan organization, and this came out just where Jack wanted it to come out.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, Checker, we appreciate you coming on the show. We hope you'll come back.
Just ask me.
Good. What do you think, Rick? He doesn't pull any punches, huh?
No. Well, you know, Mike, what a lot of people don't know about Checker is that when he was raising pet turtles in the South Bronx as a young boy back around World War II, he frequently worried in looking at pet stores about the narrowness of their curricula right. and the fact that there were only a couple tricks that most dogs or most bunnies could do.
Or turtles.
Or turtles.
Right.
And he said to himself as he was walking those 6 and 8 ounce turtles back down the street to the city, by God, one day after I finish raising these turtles, I am going to go broaden America's curricula. And what's beautiful is that he's doing it and he's working on it today. I think it's an inspiration to children and to recovering alcoholics across this great nation.
Rick, that is a beautiful story.
Why, thank you.
But you know what? Enough chit-chat, Rick. It is time to play Pardon the Gadfly. This is where we debate. This is how it works. We debate three topics, right? 2 minutes each. And at the end, I will declare a victory. Okay? Make sense?
Wait a minute. I think I'm missing something there.
Okay, very good. All right, so Rick, topic number one. President Bush wants to hold schools accountable for their achievement in science, not just in reading and math, under the No Child Left Behind Act. Good idea or not?
It's a little goofy. I mean, as far as I could tell, the next idea in line would be to start worrying about whether kids actually know history or whether they're actually learning a foreign language. If you start actually expecting children to learn a lot of stuff and develop a whole bunch of skills, there's no telling where this is going to end.
Wait, you just told that beautiful turtle story about narrowing the curriculum, Rick. Clearly not being consistent today. But you know what? Look, Rick, this is a great idea. And in fact, it is a good idea to also test in history. Because, you know, as we heard from Checker, this narrowing is happening. And it's a shame. And we need all students to have a broad education. We also know, by the way, from new book out by E.D. Hirsch, The Knowledge Deficit, is that the best way for kids to learn how to read, especially when after they learn how to decode, is to read real stuff like good history and literature and the arts.
Now, I think, I mean, what this really points to is two key points. First, anybody who pretends to be shocked that we're seeing narrowing in curricula when we've got a national accountability law built entirely around reading and math has been out to lunch. The way accountability is supposed to work is that people do what you reward them for doing and what you punish them for not doing. So there's no surprises there.
The second point
is that we absolutely should be thinking about all the skills we want kids to learn. But what that points out is how rickety the NCLB apparatus is. Because every child is expected to be proficient in everything that's tested, the more subjects you add, the harder it's going to be for schools to hit their targets. So what we need to do is think about how do you broaden their expectations without subverting the framework of educational accountability.
Okay, very nice. But you did say that, you know, you have to push people in order, you know, with the right incentives to learn. So what incentives do you face in your life as a think tanker, Rick?
Few, if any, which explains so much.
Okay, very good. All right, time for topic number two.
All righty. Now, Mike, I know you're a big fan of this kind of stuff. Lets you try to tell all kinds of folks, universities and otherwise, what to do. Accountability in higher education. A federal panel is considering calling for a national test for colleges and universities to find out how much their students are learning. A logical extension of NCLB or a bureaucratic nightmare?
You know, Rick, you're right. I love this idea. And it is because I am drunk with power. You know, I mean, here I am. I am part of the, you know, Washington, D.C. crowd. And, you know, frankly, I think we should run the nation's education system from D.C.
It's those years as a minor appointed official
minor.
In the U.S. Department of Education.
It has a taste of power. Okay, I would give you my full title, but it would waste most of 2 minutes. But I was not a minor official. Okay, now, Rick. But seriously, this is a good idea. At least there's a kernel of a good idea here. It is a nightmare that parents and students have no idea what to expect in terms of what they're going to learn at a college or university. I mean, parents are shelling out tens of thousands of dollars, taxpayers are shelling out big money. We got no idea if any of these people going into college learn anything from the time they're a freshman to a senior. You should be able to find out if you go to college X, you're actually going to learn a lot. If you go to college Y, you're probably just going to hang out with a bunch of rich kids.
Not that there's anything wrong in hanging out with a bunch of rich kids,
yes,
but a simple test makes sense in some cases. When we're talking about making sure that children in grades 3 to 8 are learning stuff, simple tests work pretty well. When we're worrying about making sure that mechanics have basic skills, that they're going to be fixing airplanes, simple tests work pretty well. When we're talking about north of 4,000 two- and four-year institutions serving a whole bunch of people ages 18 to 118 with a whole bunch of needs, trying to teach them different stuff, develop different skills, the idea of having federal officials, the same U.S. Department of Education that has brought us so much success in the last several decades, having these guys engage in a partnership to develop any kind of even quasi-uniform test just strikes me as a bureaucratic nightmare of the worst kind.
All right, but how about, there's got to be a compromise here, right? I mean, we've got to ask colleges and universities at least to show some way that students are learning between freshman year and college, right? And so what if they could develop at least their own test? Or maybe there could be some regional tests or 5 or 10 different ones so that we would at least know, look, do students learn how to read or write while they're there?
Well, you got the last word there on the reading and writing thing. Okay. Got to like that.
Okay, very good. Time is up on that one. By the way, Rick, do you think you would do well when you were back a senior in college? Would you have scored well on a test?
Depends what the test was in, baby. If the test was in where can you get the cheapest Cheeto in Waltham, Massachusetts, I would have said Waltham Super, 100%.
Very, very impressive. Impressive. Okay, Rick, final topic. France. We're going to France. The way to France. All right, here's the situation.
It's a beautiful place
With burning cars. We've all watched the news lately. We've got more unrest there. We had all the burning cars last fall, right? And yet a new study out shows that France is actually doing a pretty good job compared to other European countries in taking in immigrants, for example, Turkish immigrants, getting them through their education system into college. So what's happening?
Well, the funniest part, I think, of the new study is that it was produced by two professors at the University of Amsterdam. Who would have thought Amsterdam had a university? And imagine being a college student in Amsterdam. But we'll leave that aside for the moment and not worry if it had any effect on the research. Look, the bottom line here is that what they show is that the country in which cars are burning in the street has done a really good job of getting kids through to college. The countries that don't have violence in the streets, like Germany and the Netherlands, aren't getting these kids into college, but they're processing them into the workforce in some fashion. What this suggests is that if you've got a balky, poorly run economy, which is creating no jobs and no opportunities, like France, you're probably better off not educating these kids, because once you educate them, they want to go out and get real, meaningful employment.
Hold on. What happened? Where did Rick Hess go, and why is Gerald Bracey suddenly in the studio?
What the heck? Look, you got to be realistic. If you've got a dysfunctional, balky, poorly run economy with extensive licensure rules, strict regulations on your ability to hire and fire, something that looks like, say, an American public school system, right, you're probably better off not producing talent for it because there's just no way to get the folks hired or to reward them.
All right, but obviously here in America we have the opposite problem, right? We have a very strong economy, lots of opportunities for people who have higher education, and yet we've got thousands of kids dropping out of high school, dropping out of the economy, especially in our urban areas, right? So I hope you're not implying that what we should be doing here in America is dumbing down our standards and just throwing kids into these dumb voc ed programs.
No, we should, one, send those kids to France, because that way they'll have a hobby. And two, what it means is we should think about why it is that the French economy is in the tank, and we should try to make sure that American organizations, which are set up that
and
way,
our time is out,
like our schools, look a little more productive.
And our time is out. What hobby would they have in France?
Burning cars.
Burning cars. Good. Do you hate France, Rick?
No. I had a wonderful time in Bordeaux once.
Okay, very good. All right, well, it is now time for our favorite, I think everyone's favorite, Education News of the Weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what do you have for us this week?
Well, Mike, this week's Education News of the Weird comes to us from Rochester, Minnesota, where a gentleman named Phil Reinerson has incorporated into his elementary classroom a program that actually encourages fidgeting. Children don't sit in chairs to learn. Rather, they stand at podiums, they kneel, or they balance precariously on giant exercise balls. The program is designed to reduce childhood obesity, so these kids are also strapped up to sensors that monitor their muscle movement and their calorie loss.
Sensors?
Very Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, big time.
This is making Rick fidget, by the way. I just wanted you to know.
Some of the kids like it, but Mike, it seems that some others prefer to put up walls rather than embrace new ideas. A young woman named Maya Matrios told a reporter that, "I don't like standing up. My legs get tired, and I like sitting down. And, I say, well, Mariah, I like eating donuts and frying all my meals in bacon fat, but that's not going to make me a healthier person. And by logical extension, it's surely not going to teach me my multiplication table. Isn't that right, Rick?"
Man, I got lost between all the examples there. I do know that any kid that tells me I like to sit down One, I'm a little worried about just how fat that little son of a gun's going to be. And two, I think that's probably a kid that needs to eat a few fewer Cheetos and stand up a little bit more. This stuff sounds good to me. When I was in school, man, if I could have stood up or sat down or done something other than just stared at the clock for 42 minutes, it would have been a beautiful thing. So I'm all for this guy trying this stuff out, as long as we're not talking about requiring this or getting all kook-fressed on it.
So Rick has a stand-up kind of guy.
There you go, baby.
All right, good. Liam, thank you very much for that report. And that's all the time we have for this week. Rick, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
And listeners, please join us again. And don't forget to check out the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. If you want to send us some feedback, give us your opinion on anything we've talked about today, unless you're from France and you're just angry, and frankly, we don't care, or volunteer to play part in the Gadfly on the air, shoot us an email at letters@edexcellence.net. Till next week, I'm Mike Petrilli.
I'm Rick Hess.
We're signing off from the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Thank you.